Jackman thought of his nephew. I know exactly what you mean. Two uniformed officers were walking hurriedly towards them.
Sir, could we have a word, please?
Jackman nodded and said to Marie, Go check on the others, would you? He turned back to them. Sure, lads, but make it snappy.
We were asked to check out a place called Windrush for you, sir, said the older of the two. It was PC Andy English, a good copper who'd worked with Jackman on numerous occasions.
Yes, so did you find anything?
Not exactly, sir, said the younger officer, PC Kevin Stoner.
Jackman looked at him with interest. PC Kevin Stoner was a bright young copper, and Jackman had recommended him for the CID examinations. However, Stoner had decided that as he had a really good crewmate, he would do a few more years in uniform.
The thing is, sir, continued Andy, we spent a lot of time there, and when we left we wrote it off as a no-no, but now we're not so sure. We think it warrants a second look, but with a lot more feet on the ground.
What's worrying you, Andy?
Andy adjusted his heavy equipment belt and frowned. Hard to put a finger on it, sir, but I reckon it's the bloke that showed us round, more than anything.
We think he directed us to where we needed to go a bit too carefully, sir, added Kevin. I'm certain we just saw what he wanted us to see and no more.
Who is he?
His name is Michael Lee, and he looks like the kind of man you wouldn't want to upset.
Andy sniffed. I'm pretty good at reading people, sir, and that man was hairspring taut. He was well angry when we showed up unannounced. But then he put up a good show. Nice as pie, but underneath, boiling he was, sir, absolutely boiling.
And he's the owner of Windrush?
No, he's the caretaker. It's owned by a man named Benedict Broom. Lee wouldn't say what was going on there, but he opened up a bit as we walked around, and he told us that Broom has massive plans for the place. Michael Lee seems to be working his socks off down there, and hell, Windrush is one scary dump.
And dangerous, added Kevin. He needs bulldozing and starting again.
What are these great plans?
Broom wants to turn Windrush into a retreat, somewhere for people to go and get away from life for a while. A remote spot where they would eat well, sleep well and relax. Lee was going on about water gardens, covered courtyards for silent contemplation, a garden of tranquility, reading rooms, music rooms, quiet rooms, you name it. You'd have thought Broom had millions to spend.
Maybe he does.
Kevin laughed.
Well, he's not spending too much on labour. You didn't see Michael Lee, sir. He's out there on his own with an old digger, a bloody great shovel and a barrow. No sign of any other workmen or helpers. Looked like he was doing it alone.
It was odd, sir, agreed Andy. But you could see that some major clearing work had been done. He frowned. I wouldn't mind seeing the plans and the planning permission reports.
Then get them, Constable, as soon as possible, and bring them straight to me. Meanwhile,
he took the scruffy card that Kevin Stoner offered him.
I'll have a word with this Benedict Broom, and perhaps we'll pay Windrush another visit.
Jackman watched as the two constables hurried down the corridor and felt a chill of apprehension. Over the years, Jackman had learned never to ignore these feelings of unease. It could prove costly. He walked slowly back towards the lifts, deciding that Marie's Windrush guided tour might come in useful after all. Jackman walked into the CID room and beckoned to Marie.
I've been thinking.
Marie grinned at him. Dangerous?
Probably. But the fact that we have had no time to even look at the Kenya Black case is really starting to worry me. Especially if our mother is planning a major media campaign in the near future.
You're going to clone us?
I don't think I could cope with two Charlie Buttons, could you?
Bless him, he does try. Her smile faded. So what do you have in mind regarding Kenya Black?
I think we should ring the mother, Grace Black, and go and see her. Right now, if she's in.
He ran a hand through his hair.
I'm going to throw myself on her mercy, tell her that we're reopening the case, but that there are other girls missing. I'm going to try to get her to see our problem, and promise to give our full attention to Kenya the moment we have a breakthrough on our present case.
Marie thought for a moment. I think you're right. If we at least make contact, it will give us something to hold on to and keep the super off our backs.
Then I'll get Clive to telephone her. He lowered his voice. We have to tread very warily with Grace Black. From what I've read in the files, she has never given up on finding her daughter. And as you've probably heard, she never misses any opportunity to criticize the police, and frankly, I don't blame her.
Marie nodded. I've read the reports too, sir. We need to do everything by the book where Grace Black is concerned.
Right. So what are the others up to while we're away?
Don't worry about them. They're all gainfully employed, including Gary Pritchard. He's down in the darkroom with Charlie, staring at the CCTV screens.
Ah, Nicholas Barley's info.
Yes, they are looking for Nick and the guy who was the party's main man.
Excellent, said Jackman. Then I'll see what we can arrange for this visit.
Grace Black had said that she would be at home for another 2 hours. So Jackman and Marie left immediately. They were shown into a large lounge that looked more like a city trader's office than a comfortable living area. Cardboard document boxes were stacked along one wall, and reams of printouts, letters, desk diaries, and newspaper cuttings littered every surface. Video and CD cases, all with spidery writing on the spines, were balanced in untidy towers beside the television. Marie spotted a computer, a laptop, and at least 3 telephones. Marie knew that Grace was in her early 40s. She had a thin, wiry body, piercing brown eyes and short dark hair, cropped, Marie assumed, for ease of care. From her rather creased appearance, it looked as though Grace Black spent little time on herself. They were not given a drink, merely an impatient command to sit. Not an easy task amid the clutter. Marie carefully removed a copy of the Yellow Pages and a local phone book from a hard-backed chair and perched herself uncomfortably on the edge. Jackman eased his tall frame in between a heap of box files and an open gym bag full of dirty rugby kit.
Throw that on the floor. It's only there so I don't forget to sort it out before tomorrow night.
She made an irritated huffing sound.
Not enough hours in the bloody day.
Jackman smiled.
We won't keep you long, Mrs. Black. But there is something that we would like you to know.
He launched into his semi-prepared speech and then waited. Marie waited too. They were both expecting an angry tirade, but to their surprise she remained silent. Then she said very softly,
I've heard all this before, you know.
Nor from me you haven't,
said Jackman sincerely.
We have one case to tie up first, and then, I promise you, we will not let this go again until we have found out what happened to your daughter.
I want to believe you, but...
You can. You have my word.
Frankly, I don't think you're in a position to give it. If the powers that be pull the plug on you, you'll do what all the others did and give up, making the same old excuses, and believe me, I've heard them all. Manpower, budget, priorities, you name it.
This time it's different, Mrs. Black. I have their assurance that I can stay with this case until its conclusion, and I will use every tool and every officer available to me.
Forgive my scepticism, but this sounds as if your top brass needs this nasty little mess swept away. They've probably got wind of the fact that I intend to start making serious waves again. They don't really care about me or my family's grief, D.I. Jackman. I'm just an embarrassment and an inconvenience, and they want to shut me up.
Marie felt that she was probably right. Does it actually matter about their reasons or their politics, Mrs. Black? The main thing is that the case is going to be reinvestigated from the very beginning, and they've chosen the best detective in the whole of the region to deal with it.
She tried not to look at Jackman.
Plus, if D.I. Jackman gives you his word, then accept it. If anyone can find out what happened to your little girl, he's right here.
Grace was silent for a moment or two.
My. Maybe things will be different this time.
And can we rely on your support? Jackman asked quickly. Even if it means dragging up all the old pain again.
Do you think it ever went away?
Grace replied. No, I'm sure it didn't. But I will want to go over every report, every statement, every move of every person involved, times, dates, and what they had for breakfast. We might ask questions that seem irrelevant or very painful, but I'll want answers to all of them. Can you cope with that? Grace Black straightened her spine and pulled her shoulders back. Her whole demeanour altered.
Yes, yes, I can. And what's left of my family will too. Just how long will this other case take? The one you have to tie up first.
Marie wished Grace hadn't asked that question. They were making such good progress. You should know that it's a missing person case, Mrs. Black, said Jackman. Not a child, but a teenage girl. And under the circumstances, I'm sure you will bear with us for a short time. Initially, there were three missing girls, but we have found two already. One is safely back with her family, but the other, sadly, she is back with her family, but not the way we hoped. I'm sure we will be able to find the third girl very soon. We do have leads that we're following. Grace shook her head sadly.
Then I wish you all the luck in the world for the missing girl and her family's sake, and for ours too.
Jackman stood up. Marie felt an overwhelming urge to run from the room. There were just too many children torn from their homes, too many daughters lost to their mothers, too many heartbroken families looking for answers. As they moved towards the door, Jackman paused and said, We do appreciate your time, Mrs. Black. You'll be hearing from us just as soon as possible. Grace Black stood and tilted her head to one side. Marie was reminded of a bird. Then she gave them a sad smile and said,
Do you know, for once I believe I will.
Chapter 12 Charlie Button, Max Cohen, and Gary Pritchard sat in the flickering darkness of the monitor room, their eyes trained on the CCTV footage that flashed across the screens. I hope you three are working and not hiding down here eating Big Macs and fries. Jackman flopped into a spare chair, and Marie looked over Max's shoulder at the monitor. No such luck, said Max, eyes on his screen. We're still looking for Nick Barley's meeting with the leader of the Sikai Society. Well, while you look, I have a bit of good news for PC Pritchard here. Gary paused the footage and swung around to face him.
Sir?
As from 10 minutes ago, you're on our team. Gary's face creased into a smile.
That's great, sir. I just hope I can be of help.
I'm sure you will, Constable. Now, are you happy to commute, or can we organise somewhere temporary for you in Saltern?
He can have my guest room, boss.
Marie turned to Gary. If you want it.
That would be perfect, as long as I'm not putting you out, Sarge.
Marie smiled.
Oh, no problem.
It'll be good to have someone else around other than the cat. And she meant it. Since her husband's death, she had preferred to be on her own, but having only old memories for company was sometimes depressing. She liked Gary and believed that he was lonely, and that it also stemmed from tragic loss.
That's settled then, said Jackman.
Gary was grinning from ear to ear. When I get home tonight, I'll sort out a few things and get some clothes together. I can move in tomorrow if that's okay. It'll be much better to be on hand if I'm needed.
My thoughts precisely, said Marie. Although perhaps I should fill you in on some of my eccentric habits before you commit yourself to becoming my lodger.
Gary raised an eyebrow.
Sounds intriguing, but I'll take my chances, Sarge. When you've lived out on Allen Marsh, you've seen it all. That place has characters that make eccentric look normal.
Marie laughed.
Well, I don't think I'm that bad.
Don't you believe it, said Max. I've heard the rumours in the mess room.
Marie cuffed him across the back of the head, suddenly feeling very pleased with her new domestic arrangement. She'd been on her own for too long.
Sarge? Boss?
Gary stopped his machine and ran it back a few frames.
Got them.
Marie stared at two dark figures, both staying well back in the shadows, while young Nick Barley, blissfully unaware, stood right in front of the security camera.
Damn, they could be anyone, she cursed.
Hang fire, Sarge. The one on the left turns in a minute. Look, just there. Gary pointed to the screen.
That taller one is familiar. I think we know him, murmured Jackman.
Maybe, but... Murray squinted as she tried to make out any recognizable features.
The quality is crap. Even if he were the biggest villain in town, we'd never get an ID from that.
I'll get some stills printed off. Maybe they'll show something more.
Gary went to talk to the IT operator and returned in a few minutes with a batch of printouts. Jackman sighed.
These are no better. Max, can you clean them up, make them clearer?
No, sir. I can tell that the IT operator's done his best with them. Young Barley's face is clear as crystal, as you can see, but the head honcho and his sidekick keep close to the buildings and in deep shadow.
If they're local, they probably know the exact positioning of the cameras, Jackson muttered. Is this all we have?
We just need to check out the last meeting places that Nicholas Barley told us about.
Charlie threw them a tired smile.
You never know. We may get lucky.
Okay. You guys were here at the crack of dawn, so finish those and get home. There's little more we can do now.
Are you getting away too, sir?
Marie noted the dark patches beneath Jackman's eyes. I need to talk to this Benedict Broom guy first, and then I thought I'd go see Tony Clarkson at our home and try and find something, anything, that might give us a clearer idea of the identity of Emily.
I'll go with you, said Marie.
No, you finish up here, and then for God's sake take the opportunity to get some rest. I get the feeling that things are about to hot up.
He stabbed a finger at the grainy photographs.
It's all about these sick bloody parties, isn't it? Nick Barley helped to organize one of the venues. Tony went willingly to one, Emily too, and Asher Layton told us that Shauna Kelly said she had been to a weird party and was going to another. We have to find a way to stop them before more kids disappear or get killed. Murray thought about Emily. Time might be running out for her, wherever she was, whoever she was.
If only we could get someone inside one of these parties, she murmured. You find me a venue and I'll get in.
Rosie McKeldry stood in the doorway, a determined look in her eyes.
The problem is finding the next venue, said Gary flatly. Don't forget, we've been one step behind these guys for months and we're no nearer catching them.
But you didn't have Nick Barley, did you?
Rosie looked down at the photographs of the boy. As long as no one knows that he's helping us, he could be our way in. Jackman puffed out his cheeks. He told us he did a runner when he found out he was dealing with a load of pervs. He may not find it easy to get in again.
Maybe not, but I'm willing to bet he knows some of the kids that do go, Rosie said doggedly. At least let's talk to him.
Max frowned.
Well, if we do manage to get a location and a time, why don't we just raid the place? Avoid any risk to Rosie and lock the bastards up. Job done.
Rosie smiled.
So sweet of you to care. But think it through, Max. It may not be job done if a vanload of flatfoots charges in. What if the bosses aren't there? I doubt the organizers attend every rave. What if they leg it and we lose them? I'm 100% certain that they have an escape route worked out. And the place could be full of miners. It's too iffy. We need more intelligence before we can hit them.
Rose is right, said Jackman quietly. We do need to infiltrate one of these damn parties.
Maybe I can help you, sir.
Marie saw a tall figure standing behind Rosie. A stony-faced Danny Page, the desk sergeant, stepped into the dimly lit monitor room.
Sorry to butt in, but I think you ought to hear what a new witness has to say about your parties.
Jackman stood up. Someone has finally come forward.
After a fashion.
He ushered a blonde teenage girl into the room.
Detective Inspector Jackman, meet my daughter, Jasmine. I think you'll find she has quite a lot to tell you.
Half an hour later, Sergeant Page, arm around her shoulder, escorted his daughter from the station. Jackman and the others discussed their next move.
"So all we need is Jasmine's friend Chloe's mobile phone, and as soon as the text comes through, we'll have the location of the next venue. We're in. We've got her address. Shall Max and I go pick it up, sir?"
Rosie sounded excited. Jackman nodded.
"Yes. From what Jasmine heard, there are sometimes several parties a week, which could make the next one any time. Tonight, even."
He looked at Rosie. "Go. And I don't have to tell you how to handle Chloe and her brother, do I? There are lives at stake. You can scare the shit out of them for all I care. Just make sure they cooperate and keep their mouths shut, okay?"
Jackman and Marie walked back upstairs, leaving Gary and Charlie to check the last of the CCTV films.
"I guess you'd better hang on now until Rosie and Max get back. I want us all to be in close proximity to that party, wherever it is, if our flower is going in undercover."
"I'm not sure I'm happy about her doing this alone," said Marie.
"Well, sorry to say this, but I hardly think any of the rest of us would pass for teenagers anymore."
"Why not send Max in with her?" asked Marie. "He seemed pretty worried about her taking this on."
"Max isn't very good at getting down and dirty." Jackman gave a little laugh. "Remember the last time we tried to rough him up a bit? He still looks as if he'd walked off the cover of GQ. He's a trendy young man, all right, but certainly not the kind to attend a party of this nature. He'd stand out like a sore thumb. And anyway, I think Rosie will attract less attention if she plays this one solo."
"What about a wire?" asked Marie.
"Don't worry. I wouldn't let her do it without one. We need to know what's going on every step of the way. She'll be fine, Marie. You know Rosie, this is all part of the job, it's what we do. She's a tough cookie when she needs to be, and she can take care of herself, so stop fretting."
He glanced at his watch.
"I'm going to ring Benedict Broom, and I'm still hoping to visit Tony Clarkson, but I guess that rather depends on whether one of our nasty parties will be taking place. Perhaps you'd see if PC Andy English has had any luck with Broom's planning permission."
Jackman went into the office, picked up the tattered card that Kevin Stoner had given him, and dialed the number.
Benedict Broom answered in a deep voice, the words clearly enunciated. Jackman introduced himself and briefly told him of the missing girl and the earlier visits to his property on Roman Creek.
"Mr. Lee did tell me," said Broom, with a slight hint of amusement in his voice. "I hope his rather overwhelming appearance didn't upset your officers, and I hope that he was accommodating. Sometimes he can be a little overprotective of the old place."
"My men did mention his size, sir, but I can assure you that he was obliging enough to show them around."
He went on to say that considering the size of Windrush, they would need to make an extended search, and asked his permission to go ahead.
"Of course you must, Detective Inspector. I'll notify Mr. Lee immediately and tell him you have my full permission."
After a few words of thanks, Jackman hung up. The man had been charming, and his concern for the missing girl had sounded genuine. Jackman stared at the phone.
So why did he feel so uneasy?
With a light tap at the door, Marie entered.
"Andy's off duty, but he left you this."
Jackman took the memo and read it aloud.
"Sir, regarding planning permission for Benedict Broom's project at Windrush, we'll know more after I've spoken to a senior council official tomorrow, but I suspect things are not straightforward. I'm certain it warrants taking another look, PC Andy English."
Something in Jackman wanted to jump up, grab a van full of uniforms, and chase out to Windrush immediately. They would need to search the place under their terms, not those of the giant caretaker, Mr. Michael Lee.
"I'm sorry to say it's too late to move on this today. There aren't enough hours of daylight left. We'll go tomorrow. Why don't you go downstairs and see how much support Uniform can offer us? We'll need a pretty big team for a place that size."
Marie nodded.
"I'll see what I can organize."
In the doorway, she hesitated.
"You will let me know as soon as Rosie and Max get back, won't you?"
"Of course I will,"
he said. He watched his sergeant walk out. He fully understood her concerns. Young women were the common denominator in this investigation, and Rosie was a very pretty young woman, who looked much younger than her years. But she was also an experienced and very capable police officer. There was no doubt in his mind that she was perfect for the job, even if it was risky.
Chapter 13. After Marie had liaised with Uniform regarding the full-scale search of Windrush, she walked back into the office to get her jacket and keys. Jackman sat on the edge of her desk, deep in thought.
Thought you were going to visit Tony Clarkson.
I am, but I've been thinking, would you come with me?
Of course. But why the change of heart?
Her father. If I go alone, there'll be little chance of talking to her without him sitting in on the conversation, and that's not what I want. If you are there too, we should be able to get her alone.
I agree. She'll talk much more easily if her parents aren't there. She looked at him.
Any news from Rosie?
It's on tonight at 10:30. Max rang me just before you walked in.
Where?
Asked Marie, feeling her throat constrict.
Apparently they don't divulge the location until half an hour before it kicks off. I'm not sure what Rosie and Max said to them, but although Chloe is well pissed off, her brother Luke is singing like a bird. Max reckons he's got the wind up about something that happened there a week or so ago. Plus he has confirmed that Shauna Kelly was one of the partygoers, and he's very keen to help us. Jackman gave her a tight smile. He's told Rosie she can use his name to get in.
She trusts him?
Luke's been going for a while now. Not to every party, but quite a few of them. He's considered safe by the organizers. Not that he knows much about them.
Where's Rosie now?
Marie asked.
She's gone to borrow some suitably trendy gear from her niece. She'll be back at 10 to wait for the call.
Jackman glanced up at the wall clock.
It's only 6 o'clock, so we have plenty of time to go see Tony and grab some supper and a few hours' rest.
Jackman stood up.
Ready?
Ready.
Jackman drove fast through the lonely fenland towards Harlan Marsh. The long reed-fringed drove seemed endless. He slowed down a little. From the day he began driving in this terrain, he'd learned never to underestimate these seemingly benign roads. A change in camber, a humpback bridge, a sudden and unexpected bend, or even simple complacency could have you nose down in a deep ditch in seconds. Tiredness overwhelmed him as he eased the car around a bend and saw Harlan Marsh Town ahead of him. This visit really could have waited until the morning, but then he would need to get the search party out to the old sanatorium. Neil Clarkson opened the door. He was not exactly welcoming.
Keep it short, D.I. Jackman. My daughter is exhausted.
Maybe so, but she is alive, Jackman thought to himself, and safe. Unlike poor Emily. Of course, sir, just a few minutes with her and we'll be out of your hair.
Clarkson frowned.
Alone?
It's better that way if you have no objection. Youngsters don't like their parents hearing their secrets.
Clarkson stood back reluctantly and pointed down the long hallway.
The third door along the right-hand side. Knock loudly, she's probably got her headphones on.
Tony's room was a real mix of childish and more teenage stuff. Two cuddly teddy bears sat in front of a poster showing some kind of night creatures locked in a bloody, pointed-fanged embrace. Jackman's nephews loved Twilight, but this had a more sinister, erotic edge to it. Jackman was pretty sure that her parents were not particularly happy with their daughter's choice of artwork.
"What's the music?" he asked, as Tony took out the earpieces.
Band called Taking Back Sunday?
She looked at Jackman patiently.
You ought to have heard of him.
Oh, I didn't have you down as an emo.
For a moment her eyes widened. There was a hint of amusement, but she didn't comment. And that was fine, because it was total luck that he'd recently listened to an interview about the emo subculture on Radio 4.
I've been thinking about Emily,
said Tony slowly.
Did I tell you she spoke funny?
What, like a speech impediment? Marie said.
No, like an accent.
I think she's from Eastern Europe.
Tony's fingers idly brushed the screen of her phone, and brilliant coloured pictures flashed across it.
I'm not sure, but I can remember something about grandparents who wouldn't leave their village, even though it was really gross, you know? Like, bummed out.
Jackman puffed out his cheeks and exhaled slowly. That could be why they had no missing person report. There was a large migrant worker community of EU nationals living in Greenborough, but they stuck together and didn't trust the police.
And her name's not really Emily.
Tony stared down at a photo of a moody-looking youth with an oily tanned torso and bleached teeth.
She said the English couldn't pronounce her real name properly, so she called herself Emily because she liked it.
Jackman rubbed his forehead and tried to think. This was getting more problematic by the second.
And that's really all I can remember.
Tony swiped the beautiful boy from her screen and replaced it with a Pokemon character.
You've done well, Tony.
Marie's voice was soft.
Do you think she's dead?
The bluntness of the question made Jackman shudder. We're doing our best to get to her before anything like that can happen.
I think she's dead. The men at that place.
Tony gave an involuntary shiver.
I saw their eyes. Especially one of them. The one that hurt me, he had horrible eyes.
How do you mean?
Marie asked gently.
Like, blank. Like, yeah, he was all excited about the day that she was born and all that, but even then his eyes were still blank. Like in a zombie film. But I've never seen a human being really look that way.
Jackman felt a chill descend around them when Tony spoke about the man who had taken her. He had really terrified her, and Jackman was sure that it would take more than a little time to make those horrible memories fade. Marie looked at him, and he knew that she was thinking the same thing. Marie moved the conversation away from dead eyes.
Tony, when we spoke to you at the hospital, you said that somebody was singing. Do you remember that? Could you explain what you meant?
Tony screwed up her face in concentration.
I'd forgotten that. It seemed so weird. I mean, totally creepy. In that stinking cellar with the candles and the wine and funky music playing, this one guy starts to sing. And his voice was...
She lifted her hands in a little gesture of amazement.
Like some choir boy. But better, stronger. I mean, like, really powerful. Like he had no control over the volume. It was kind of awesome.
Marie glanced across at Jackman and shrugged. Jackman frowned. He was certain that this information was hugely significant. Thanks for that, Tony. We're going to go now. I think it's time you got some rest, okay? He took a card from his pocket and handed it to her. Maybe you could write down anything else that comes to you. Anything, no matter how small. And ring me. The girl took the card, and her cold fingers touched Jackman's as she did so.
Keep seeing her. See her face as they dragged her away.
She placed the card on her bedside cabinet and slowly turned towards them. Tears filled her eyes. Marie took the girl's hand in hers. With one hand to her ribs, Tony slipped a thin arm around Marie and held on tightly, burying her head in Marie's chest.
Oh, because of her birthday,
she sobbed.
If it had been different, it could have been me that took, couldn't it?
The gobby little pain in the arse had vanished. Marie stroked the girl's hair and made soothing noises.
But it wasn't you, was it, sweetheart? You are safe home where you belong. Now all you need to do to help Emily is write down any new memories, anything that comes to you, okay? And then when we find her, and we will find her, Tony, you can put all this behind you and get on with your life.
The girl cried for a little longer, and Jackman became conscious of her father waiting anxiously outside her door. At least he had the good sense not to enter. They left some 10 minutes later, convinced that there really was another young victim out there somewhere, waiting for them to find her. But would they find her alive? As the car sped back towards the station, Jackman said, "I hope I'm right, but my housekeeper generally leaves me some hot food when we're busy. Want to share?" Marie had heard about Mrs. Maynard's legendary home-cooked dishes, and her stomach grumbled.
"I'd love to, if you're sure."
"Excellent." He gave her a little smile. "Although it'll probably be the first time she's forgotten, but no worry. M&S is lurking in my freezer waiting for emergencies." He turned the car off the main road and headed towards Cartoft. "It'll give us a chance to plan tonight and talk over what we've just heard from Tony.
And in nicer surroundings than the Nick."
Marie loved Jackman's windmill home. It felt so welcoming. She would give her eye teeth for a place like that. Bill would have loved it. She could imagine him out in the old store, working patiently on some ancient motorcycle engine. She gave an inadvertent sigh. "You okay? Not worrying about Rosie again, are you?"
"No, just a little nudge from the past. Sometimes things creep up on you when you least expect it."
"Bill." She nodded.
"I know it's pointless, but when someone dies too soon, when they're still young, you can't help wondering how they would have turned out."
She rubbed her hands together thoughtfully.
"I try to imagine what he would have made of things. Modern policing, all the new technology like cars that park themselves and phones that operate your central heating."
She laughed softly.
"He was a bit of a technophobe, really. I think that's why he loved old motorbikes so much. He liked things that smelled of oil, that you could tinker with and coax back to life.
Plugging your car into a computerized diagnostic reader didn't do it for him at all. And I really don't think he would approve of having your parcels delivered by drone." Jackman nodded. "I feel a bit the same. I mean, I love how science has given us ways to solve crime so much quicker, and the advances in medical science are undeniable. But I think my heart is happiest with the simpler things." Marie brushed away her thoughts of the past when she realized that they were turning into the lane leading to his home. "Fingers crossed that Mrs. Emma's worked some magic in my kitchen." He grinned at her. "And I don't think a small restorative glass of wine would go amiss either." He pulled up under the carport, turned the engine off and flung open the door. "Can you smell cooking?" Marie stepped out and inhaled.
"I'm getting a distinct whiff of curry. Is there an Indian restaurant in Cartoft?"
"There's nothing in Cartoft. And I mean nothing other than the church and the village hall, so that bodes very well." Together they hurried over to the mill. The smell of aromatic spices greeted them at the door. "Oh, yes." Jackman's eyes lit up. "It won't be like anything you'd find in a curry house. Mrs. M doesn't use recipes, she just does her own thing." He led the way through to the kitchen, picked up a note from the table and read it out. "Chicken curry keeping hot in the small oven, and there's some of that foreign bread stuff that you like in a tray under foil. Heat it for a few minutes. Don't forget the gardener's coming on Thursday to do the hedges, Hetty." Marie smiled.
"I'd like a Mrs. M. Do you rent her out?"
"She's worth her weight in gold, believe me." Jackman took off his jacket and threw it over the back of a chair. "Make yourself comfortable. I'll get the wine while the naan bread is warming." He opened the fridge and took out a bottle of Chardonnay. "I have no idea why, but for some reason it's perfect with chicken curry."
"It better not be too nice or we'll have to call off tonight's sortie."
"Don't worry, I'm rationing it." He splashed wine into two glasses, replaced the top and returned the bottle to the fridge.
A few minutes later, he was dishing the food into two large bowls and putting the hot bread on a plate between them.
"Dig in and enjoy."
As they ate, they talked about Tony and the worrying things she had said. If Emily was a migrant worker, tracing her would be difficult given the tight-knit community that she would live in. After a while, Marie added, "I know we have the Windrush search to contend with tomorrow, but we mustn't forget that we have to go and talk to the residents of Allenby Creek."
She finished the last mouthful, then said,
"Surely someone must have seen something. It's such an out-of-the-way spot.
You'd think a strange car or someone you don't recognize would stand out.
Let's hope we find someone who uniform missed on their house-to-house.
Jackman stood up and collected the plates.
Oh, dear. How time flies. Thanks, Mrs. M. Much appreciated.
I'll second that, Marie smiled at him. About tonight. I feel quite... She paused.
Excited? Apprehensive?
Bit of each, I suppose. This mission of Rosie's could provide a lot of information, but at the same time men who do that sort of thing make me feel almost homicidal, as well as sick to my stomach.
Marie made a disgusted face. I empathize with that, believe me. That's why we have to nail them as soon as we can. Marie nodded.
Yes, I know. I just hope that we're not sending Rosie into a situation that's too dangerous.
We'll all be close by. If she has the slightest trouble, that club won't know what hit it. He narrowed his eyes. But I get the feeling that she will just test the waters tonight. She'll gather as much intelligence as she can without blowing her cover, and leave with an option to return, should it be necessary. He smiled at Marie. For once, I don't share your concerns. I think Rosie will be ace at this. She's done undercover before, and apparently very well.
Perhaps it was their two genders that was the cause of this rare difference of opinion between her and Jackman. Marie fervently hoped she was wrong, and it would be Jackman saying, I told you so.
Now, would you like a coffee before we plan tonight's strategy?
Perfect, thank you.
Marie took a deep breath and decided that as the evening was going to go ahead anyway, she might as well be prepared.
Let's get it sorted.
As 10 o'clock approached, Jackman began to feel the same mix of apprehension and excitement. The arrangement was far from perfect. As they had no idea where they were going, they couldn't plan a suitable recce or backup. They were going to have to wing it. Rosie, wearing an outfit that would have scandalized Jackman on any other occasion, stared, unblinking at Chloe's phone, willing it to ring. Marie paced the CID room, as did Max Cohen. In fact, Jackman thought, Max was even more worried than Marie, which was not like him. Usually he loved this sort of thing.
Bingo, whispered Rosie, and grabbed the mobile.
Everyone held their collective breaths.
Jubilee Lane, the old rowing club near the mill.
Rosie snapped the phone shut and jumped up.
Anyone know it? Because I don't.
Relax, Flower, said Max, feeding the data into his computer.
It's only about 20 minutes away, on the road to Harlem Marsh. I used to go fishing near there with a mate of mine. The mill is derelict and all sealed up. I'm getting a satellite picture of the area now.
As far as I remember, the clubhouse is closed too. There was a fire there a few years back and they moved the rowing club to new premises. Jackman nodded to himself. There are no residences in the lane and everything else is abandoned, so it's the perfect place for a party. He turned to Gary. Go and give Uniform the exact location. I want a unit well out of the way, but close enough should we need them. And softly, softly, please. No blues and twos under any circumstances.
Here we go.
Max brought up an aerial view of the rundown clubhouse and scanned the surroundings.
If we drop Rosie here, he pointed to a narrow lane, she could walk through and tie up with the main path to the venue. I think most of the partygoers will come from this direction from the main road.
He traced his finger further along the river edge.
I think we could find some pretty good cover along the towpath and around the mill. We need to be as close as possible.
Jackman straightened up. I agree. Everyone ready? So let's get out there. Rosie, still up for it?
Am I ever? Bring it on.
Jackman smiled at those bright, intelligent eyes, looking out from behind false eyelashes. Rosie's choice of clothing and clever makeup made her look about 16. The only one of them who wasn't all revved up was Marie. She had said pretty well nothing since they arrived. It worried Jackman, but he knew that she would be behind them all the way if the shit were to hit the fan. Check her wire, Max. We can't afford to lose contact.
Already done, Gov. And it's not standard issue. I've adapted it myself. It's top of the range. She has the best signal and range available.
Jackman looked around. Then let's go, folks, and good luck. We have some seriously bad men to get the dirt on. He touched Rosie's shoulder. Be careful in there, Rosie. The slightest problem and you get out. And I mean it. No heroics. Just leg it. Fast.
Chapter 14. Rosie slipped in behind a group of four or five youngsters and tried to listen to their conversation. It was clear that they were already pretty pissed, even before they got to the free booze. Rosie felt her anger mount. These silly kids were such easy prey for the perverts. She took a deep breath. She needed to keep her concentration. She couldn't afford to miss a thing. One of the girls ahead of her was hanging onto a skinny, spiky-haired youth, jabbing a finger at him as she lurched unsteadily along beside him.
And you can keep your leery eyes off that ginger slapper if she turns up again tonight. I saw you, Kelvin, with your tongue hanging down to your belly button.
Kelvin shrugged. Dunno who you're talking about. Do you, Billy?
The other boy kicked at an empty drink can as he sauntered along, hands stuffed deep into his jeans pocket.
Nah, unless you mean the tart with the tramp stamp.
Rosie tried to hide a smile. She knew that the boy was referring to a tattoo worn just above the girl's bottom. The other two girls, arm in arm, tottering along in their high-heeled fashion boots, laughed loudly.
Yeah, we saw you, Kelvin. Couldn't take your eyes off her tits, could you?
Kelvin continued to stroll calmly along.
Bollocks, you were all too wasted to know what was happening.
Rosie had been hoping to slip into the venue as part of the group, but as they moved towards the dark hulk of the boathouse, she decided to hang back and go in alone. If there was to be any confrontation, it would be better to be away from the other kids. As it turned out, it was easy.
I don't know you.
The man who stood just inside the door was slim and well-dressed with a slight northern accent. He took her wrist and held her back.
I'm a friend of Luke's,
said Rosie with a bored smile.
He can't make it tonight, but he told me I might enjoy myself.
She looked the man full in the eyes and ran her tongue slowly around her scarlet lips.
Do you think I'd enjoy myself here?
The man let go of her hand and smirked.
Oh, I should think you'll have a ball, Angel. Maybe several if you're lucky.
He grinned at her.
And if you do have a good time, come and see me before you leave. Maybe I can arrange to make you a regular.
Thank you.
Rosie blew him a kiss and disappeared into the boathouse.
Oh, so easy,
she whispered, knowing that Max and Charlie would be somewhere close by listening to her every word. Somewhere up ahead, Rosie heard music. She followed some other revelers through a big deserted area lined with metal racks protruding from the walls. She guessed that rowing boats would have been stored here once.
This way.
A man stood in the shadows, ushering the teenagers into a big crowded back room. There were a dozen small tables with empty wine bottles holding candles. Considering that it was such a dump, the room had an oddly cozy feel. The techno music was loud, and the beat reverberated through her body, making her wonder what effect it would have on her microphone.
Drink. It's free.
An older man took her arm and drew her towards a table crammed full of beer and cider cans and dozens of plastic glasses of wine.
You're new, aren't you? And all alone?
He peered at her inquisitively.
Now, would that be gutsy or foolish, I wonder?
Rosie took a mental snapshot. The man was around 40, with thin, straggly hair, small eyes and a narrow, sharp nose. The waistband of his cheap suit fought with his gut. He had very bad taste in clothes.
I do as I please,
she said disdainfully, picking up a glass of white wine that she had absolutely no intention of drinking.
I don't need a bodyguard.
Well, it gets pretty intense in here as the night goes on,
I hope you're up for it.
I'm up for seeing you in a holding cell, you scumbag. Rosie shrugged and said, I like intense.
The man leered at her, and she felt his eyes on her short, shiny red miniskirt.
So how did you find out about us?
He asked, sipping what looked like neat scotch from a straight-sided glass.
A friend told me.
And who would that friend be?
His piggy eyes never left hers.
Luke, if it's any of your business.
Luke Jones.
Rosie thought quickly. Luke and Chloe's surname was Perry, but did he use an alias when he came here?
Luke with black hair and a blonde Mohican stripe, and breath that could unblock drains.
Ah.
The man smiled and stepped away from her.
Well, enjoy yourself, sweetheart. What was your name?
Petra,
said Rosie. Then, remembering why she was there, said,
And yours?
The man's lips tightened, and he stared hard at her. Clearly no one had ever asked that question before.
Harry.
Dirty Harry.
She ran her fingers across the lapel of his cheap suit, and saw his Adam's apple move up and down.
Sometimes, he said in a hoarse whisper.
Rosie took that as her cue to leave.
Then see you later, Harry. Maybe.
Or maybe not, you tosser.
Rosie moved towards some kids who were swaying around a makeshift dance floor. No one took any notice of her as she danced between them until she spotted a place on the far side of the room where she could get a good look around. She needed to find a regular, someone that would talk to her. She pretended to sip her wine as she checked out the possible candidates. It would have to be a boy. The girls wouldn't be friendly. They would see her as a threat. After a while, she spotted a slightly older-looking boy, sitting alone with only a can of lager for company. As far as she could tell, there were no girls hanging around him, and he hadn't made any effort to dance or chat anyone up.
Moving in for a chat with a local,
she whispered to the invisible Max.
This chair taken?
Not waiting for a reply, Rosie sat down and crossed her long legs seductively.
Looks like it is now.
For a moment she thought he was going to get up and move away.
I don't know anyone here,
she said softly.
Well, you're not missing much.
He looked around.
Load of wankers. Oh, I was told these parties are really cool.
She gave him a shy smile.
My name's Petra.
The boy ran a hand through his shock of dark hair and looked at her thoughtfully.
You don't look like the slags this place usually attracts. I'm Will. Why do you come here if it's such a crap place? Good point.
He took a long slug of his lager.
To keep an eye on someone who shouldn't be here, but who seems to have some kind of death wish. Girlfriend? Sister? Dumb brother, actually.
He rolled his eyes.
You were such a cute kid, too.
Will reached down beside his chair, lifted up a second sealed can of beer and passed it to her.
If you want a drink, Petra, have this. Never touch the wine, or anything anyone offers you that has already been opened.
Rosie put down the wine on the scarred, damp table and accepted the can. She peeled back the ring pull, allowed the froth to settle, then sipped the drink.
I should have thought of that. You've actually seen the drinks being spiked.
Regularly. It's all part of the fun, so they tell me.
And is that too?
She gestured with her head towards a long table cloaked in shadow at the very back of the room. Three men sat along the far side of the table and watched the teenagers intently, particularly one couple who were frantically groping at each other's writhing bodies. Rosie saw a tiny red light. One of the men was operating a small handheld digital camcorder.
As I said, they're wankers. There's no such thing as a free lunch or a free drink, Petra, he sniffed. Oh, you'll be all right tonight. They never try anything on your first visit.
But after a couple of times I want payment, in some form or other. Know what a voyeur is.
Better than you think,
she murmured, knowing that he wouldn't hear her above the music.
If those guys are perverts, why doesn't someone shop them?
She hoped she sounded naive. The men take pictures of everyone. And they warn you off by threatening to send copies to your parents, or whoever they think would scare you the most. He looked rather sadly across the floor, to where a younger boy was being fondled by a drunken girl with a tragic haircut and makeup that would have scared birds. And as most of these idiots finish up half-naked and off their heads, it's not something they want to share with Mummy and Daddy. Rosie followed his gaze.
Your brother?
Will nodded. Sean. He's only 14. And the way he's going, he'll be lucky to make it through the next couple of months without picking up an STD.
And he won't listen to you.
Rosie tried hard not to sound too adult, but she had a strong feeling that Will was on the level.
He's addicted to these parties. Apart from tying him down, the best I can do is just be here and watch out for him.
He frowned.
I've no proof, but I reckon worse things happen here than just a few sick old blokes jerking off over some horny young girls.
Rosie swallowed.
Like what?
Don't mean to scare you. I'm probably wrong. But I think certain girls are picked out, if you know what I mean.
For other things. Dirty bastards. I assume you mean for sex.
What else would they want them for? Said Will morosely. I've seen those old guys take some of them to one side. Then later they've gone, just disappeared. He turned a serious face to Rosie.
You don't belong here. Get out while you can, and don't come back. I may just do that, Will. Tell me, have you ever met a girl called Emily while you're here?
Will shook his head.
Don't think so. Why? She's a friend of mine.
Rosie lied.
She went all secretive on me and I haven't seen her for a few days. I wondered if she'd been coming here, that's all.
She looked around again.
But what about you? Surely the men that run these parties notice that you don't, join in.
Will smiled at her.
Well, I'm not actually dead from the waist down. For the sake of watching out for Sean, I do occasionally find a fit bird and have a quick game of tonsil hockey.
Rosie laughed.
I'm afraid I haven't seen too many fit birds here so far.
No.
I thought I was looking at one right now.
Rosie stiffened. There was no mistaking the look in Will's eyes. How far would she need to go in order not to blow her cover? Charlie Button chuckled softly in the darkness. They had found a small deserted outbuilding attached to the derelict mill, and almost directly behind the boathouse. The signal from Rosie's hidden microphone was strong, and the high-tech equipment sensitive enough to filter out the background noise, leaving Rosie's speaking voice, even her whispers, coming through crystal clear.
"I do believe that girl's enjoying herself," he said.
"What the hell do you mean by that, Charlie?"
Max said. Jackman turned his head. Max never spoke like that to Charlie.
"Just that she's getting on with the job rather well."
Charlie sounded nonplussed.
"And she's acting out her part as a teenage raver very convincingly."
Jackman watched Max struggle to hold his temper.
"She shouldn't be in there."
Ignoring his colleague, Charlie went back to listening, passing on snippets as they came through. Then he got to his feet.
"She's getting out, sir. She's seen someone she recognizes."
He listened again.
"She says to meet her where we dropped her off in 5 minutes.
Max was first out of the old storeroom door, and before Jackman could even stand up, he had run out into the night. As he followed him out, Jackman wondered about Max's behavior. Could he be... It took a little longer than Rosie had said, but not long after her message, she came hurrying towards them. Max had run on ahead.
"Are you okay? Shit, you had us scared."
Rosie raised her eyebrows.
I'm fine, absolutely fine, you muppet.